On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we talked to Mr. Do Everything NFL broadcaster Dan Helly. He talked about how close the Raiders are to being great, why people hate Derek Carr, and he gave Soto and me some badly needed hair tips. We also count our wins next season now that we know what opponents we have home and away. We analyze Gruden's comments from Monday, count all the possible receivers available in free agency and the draft. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Nirvana CBD at nirvanacbd.com. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. Nirvana CBD, find your state of natural relaxation. And we really appreciate you subscribing, rating, and commenting on whatever platform you are using to listen to us today. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into the nightmares. There
it is! Caught! Touchdown!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, Rory Parsons.
All right, another episode of the Autumn Windbags in the books. Yes, that voiceover guy, that very charming sounding voiceover guy was wrong. No Rory today. He's got some stuff he's got to handle. So it's just a tag team duo of Soto and me, RJ.
Let's do it.
Of the Autumn Windbags. We're going to talk to Dan Helly here in a little bit. But the first thing I want to get going on is the opponents for next season have been arranged for the Raiders, at least. Now, we don't know the actual schedule. That comes later. But we do know our home opponents, and we do know our away opponents. And so, obviously, every single year, you play two different divisions outside of yours, and then two other teams that kind of match up with yours. So, obviously, we'll have the home and aways with the rest of the AFC West. We do play the AFC North, but we also play the NFC East.
Ooh, ooh.
Oh, yeah, baby. NFC East.
Jesus.
We're home against the Eagles, home against the Washington football team, and then we're away at the Dallas Cowboys.
And the Giants.
The Giants. Oh, that was a thing of beauty to hear. Oh, that's so good. I was just so envious of like the NFC West that got to just like pick on the NFC East.
Oh, God.
Like the Rams started out so hot. It's like, yeah, that's because you played
four out of the first six games. Four out of the first six was against the NFC East.
Oh, God. That was so beautiful. Also, our other home games, Baltimore Ravens, I'll be a bruiser. Cincinnati Bengals, who knows what they're going to be next season?
Who knows, man?
Dolphins. And then our away non-division games are Cleveland Browns again. Mm-hmm. Indianapolis Colts. Who knows going to be playing quarterback for them? And the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah,
we got some away games, buddy.
Yeah, there's some travel games in here, so we should hopefully things are opened up and we can make a trip down some of these, at least one of these games.
Yeah, man, I'm down to go to Dallas. Oh, I do love the city of Denver.
I love Dallas.
Yeah, Dallas is awesome.
Denver's fun. Denver's fun.
New York. I mean,
yeah, I've never had a bad
New
time
Jersey,
in New York.
Right?
New Jersey.
Jersey.
See, we go see Joey Diaz.
Yeah. So we got a rough schedule. I mean, considering the Chiefs, you know, best team in football. Chargers could be fantastic. Ravens most likely fantastic. Dolphins just only going to get better. So I'm looking at like for sure wins, right?
Well, okay. Here's the thing about the Dolphins. They have a lot of players this year who don't have the record on tape that they're playing up to this year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, who knows? Who knows? I think they're a big candidate for a drop-off next year. They have guys who've been in the league, who've been guys, you know, they're here and there, but they haven't been to the level they're playing this year. Did it all just gel this year? Is it a magical season? Who knows? We'll see. That's the beauty of the NFL.
Yeah. They do have the third overall pick. They got that from the Houstons. And I think it all kind of depends is he going to make that jump on his second year or not? I think that's a big part of it because their defense played hard, played pretty smart.
Yeah.
They got a ton of young guys with those draft picks that they used for rebuilding. I think it all comes down to Tua, if he's going to be what people think he's going to be or not. The other I'm thinking all right, who am I really confident about beating next year right now? Broncos at home. Bengals at home, Eagles at home, Washington at home, Broncos away. Dallas away, Giants away. That's 7 wins. That's 7 wins. I'm pretty confident. I'm like, all right, I'm pretty confident the Raiders should be able to beat.
I'm not quite as confident about that Dallas game away. Okay. They get Dak back. They get Tyron Smith back. It could totally change that team. They get the quarterback and they get the left tackle back. That line gets healthy. It'll be a shootout. You can't, I mean, you can. You saw the Dolphins go from worst to first defensively. They can get a lot better 1 year to the next, but I mean, chances are probably not. So that could be a shootout in Dallas.
The games I'm most worried about, obviously the both Chief games are always a pain.
Steelers, man.
At Steelers.
God damn.
At Colts. At home against the Ravens. Those 5 games are tough. So that's 12 games. We got to find 4 wins of those remaining 4 games. And I think we can do it. It's like an eat and starve schedule. Like
yeah.
AFC North, NFC East, and then our boys in the AFC West.
I'm just interested to see what happens with the Chargers because a new coach can really turn this team around, and they have the pieces, man. They have pass rushers. They have guys in the back end on defense. You know, Herbert kid, man, goddamn, that kid's fucking good. He's special, dude. He's got the grit too. Like, he's not afraid. So we'll see, man. We'll see if he makes that big jump. Like, we talked about Tua. If Herbert makes that jump to year 2, fuck, man, that's going to be shitty.
I think when I think of like Justin Herbert, I just hope there's so many of these like rookie guys that like looked like flash great. And then now that defensive coordinators now have tape on them, it's a whole different ball game. You all right? What are you doing there? You just headbutt C-3PO?
Yeah, knocked over some. Like...
All right. So that's the schedule.
Art is not going to edit that out. Art is going to keep that shit in there.
Obviously. I gotta bring real life to our listeners. This is unfiltered, unedited, raw. This is raw. I'm not gonna put fancy paint over our warts. No, you're gonna see it all, baby. That's how we roll.
Love it.
So on Monday, John Gruden did kind of a post mortem of the Broncos game specifically, but also of just kind of the season in general, right? And he said a lot of things. He said 3 specific things I want to get into. And in John Gruden fashion, there was a lot of injuries, things out of my control, nothing I can do.
Smoke and mirrors.
A little smoke and mirrors, a little blame game here, but also a lot of insightful stuff. And in multiple cases, it sounds like John Gruden is talking like he recognizes a mistake was made and we need to move forward to adjust it. Let's see if we agree on these little hints that we picked up. Right. Here's the first thing you said on Monday. He was asked, how do you make sure your team doesn't collapse late in the season like they did this season and in 2019?
Well, you have to obviously have a little bit of luck. You have to have your top players available. Obviously, you have to have intense preparation, the way you practice. You gotta be able to really prepare your team well. You know, you got to be ready for just about anything, and cover some situations. And you got to have a couple plays in your back pocket that maybe you haven't shown all year, a couple blitzes that you haven't shown all year. There's a lot of things that go into it, obviously, but getting your best players on the field, playing at their best is a big part.
So typical injury conversation he brings up every single time.
Yeah.
And he also said something that, remember we talked about Pat McAfee saying, John Gruden suffers from the same thing Andy Reid used to, where he just blows his load on his plays early in the season, first 9-10 games, and then he's got nothing left, becomes predictable, becomes a problem. He seemed to directly speak to that, right? We got to make sure we got some plays going, some blitz, not just on offense, but on defense. You know, I liked what I heard out of Gruden. It sounded like somebody who's hearing that chatter recognizes that error and at least vocally can admit to it. In a John Gruden way, not saying it's my fault. Yeah. I necessarily have to do this, but in general, these are the things that you have to work on.
If one needed to get better, then they would just probably get better this way.
If there was a team hypothetically that fell apart late in seasons, I just opine that perhaps this is the route that this mysterious team you speak of may need to go.
You know what? He's got so much goddamn tape out there. Everyone knows his shit. He has to figure something out, either whole new formations that people haven't been preparing for, or new schemes out of the same old formations, because everyone knows his shit, man. And another thing that he touched on, he's real shitty on Gunther right there, getting him prepared and like, ooh, game planning. Like, he ain't talking about the offense, baby. He's talking about the defense. Those three things, getting him prepared, game planning, and new blitzes, that's all defense.
Oh, dude, when Paul Gunther was his defensive coordinator, he was like kind of protecting him and shielding him. Now that he's fired, baby, that's the scapegoat. All our problems sailed away with Gunther.
That piece of shit, I never liked him. I never trusted him. He told me about that in his ass.
I wonder if Paul Gunther's the kind of guy that like listens to everything Gruden says, like is online, like all the time on Twitter, like looking up everything that people say about him. He's hearing John Gruden just torpedo his ass now that he's canned.
To shit down his neck. I mean, that's his boy. Gruden might have just been like, listen, bro, I got to, you know how it is, right? Yeah, I'm cool. All right. Then you just shit on him.
I'll write you a really, really good reference. But just to let you know, I'm going to shit on you for the rest of the offseason, because I got to blame you for the defense. And, Gruden's not totally wrong, right? Like, we better hope that Paul Gunther was the problem, because this defensive roster isn't going to turn over overnight. Like, if it's not Paul Gunther, we're royally screwed.
Yeah, it's going to be scary. It's going to be scary if it was just the wrong pieces, man. That's going to be tough. I don't think it is. Honestly, I don't think it is. When you hear what the players were saying about him not being a good game planner, I mean, goddamn, 30, what did confidence say? 30 to 35 third down calls, just third down calls. Yep. That is fucking crazy.
For one game.
What he was saying that the entire playbook was open every single game. And hell no, man, you can't have that. So I have a lot of faith that whoever we bring in is going to be able, that's going to be the big thing, is the teaching aspect. I would have a good teacher coming in here, a guy that has a record of being a good teacher. The game planning stuff will go week to week, but man, that teaching aspect is huge.
The next question he's asked was pretty straightforward. What do you need to improve on the most?
Third and one, very disappointing. We're number one in the league on third and 10. I think we're number 32 on third and one.
Isn't that crazy? I haven't looked up that stat. Isn't that nuts? Number one on third and 10, last at third and one. I mean, I guess you kind of want to be proud of the first part, right? With third and long, we're the best in the league. We can get you a tenth of the way down the field, no problem. But that 1/100th of the way?
Can't do it.
That 36 inches? No, that yardstick's way too long.
Third and one, very disappointing. We're number one in the league on third and 10. I think we're number 32 on third and one. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Defensively, we have to improve on all three levels. There's no question about that. We need some impact plays from our defense, sack, strip, fumbles, turnovers. We got to do a lot better job on the defensive side of the ball.
I mean, he's right. And again, he's right. Well, let's put the blame on Gunther. Let's do that.
Yeah. Well, also he put it on the players too. Mm. He said the players need to make plays, and that's true. The players do need to make plays, but I mean, we've all had jobs, we've all done work where we're not exactly sure what to do, and it's a little bit rough. Man, who knows? Are there players on this roster that need to come out? Players? Are there? We'll see. But like that whole third and 10, number one in the league, and then last in the league on third and one, that's like having a big dick but can't get it up. Mm-hmm. It's like, great. What the fucking third and ones? Those are the ones. You get a lot more of those than third and tens.
Yeah, one really big dick is like the entire distance that we can't achieve. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Third and inches. Third and inches is longer for some people than others, Soto. I don't know if they taught you that anatomy class, but it's a fact.
You've been peeking at me in the shower?
Well, this is your mother's been telling you stories about me again, eh? So you're you can hear John Gruden talks like an offensive coach about the defense. Like, instead of talking scheme you know, we need to design our stunts better. We need to make sure our linebackers, you know, can scrape off the top better. We got to make sure that our, you know, our cornerbacks don't do that. Instead, he's just like, we need to be better in every aspect of the game, and we need turnovers. We need dynamic plays. And he's right. Like, there's a lot of the, like, the big plays on defense. There's a lot of it's just kind of random, like, parts. You know what I mean? Like, it's a game of inches, and some things fall your way, some things don't. Like, fumble recoveries is the most random thing ever. Causing forced fumbles, there's data that says, like, certain players are better at it than others. Recovering fumbles, it's just, like, rolling dice. It's just, like, what
a ball bounces wherever.
It, yeah, that ball is shaped the way that it is to so it can fly through the air perfectly, not so it can bounce like a soccer ball correctly. So there's a lot of parts of it that's just random, but he's right. Like, our defense was just like, if you're waiting for a big play, like, unless we're playing lock and the Broncos, like, our defense just isn't going to do anything. It's going to make a highlight reel. And yeah. And we got spoiled in those Khalil Mack days where it was just like regularly, like twice, three just times line a game. Them up. Line two, three up. Times a game, something big was going to happen from our D.
God damn it. Don't mention that name to me, please. It hurts my heart.
The D? Oh, you mean Khalil Mack. Sorry.
Khalil Mack, yes. Well, the D too.
All right, so this is what was most interesting about this conversation that John Gruden had on Monday. He was asked point blank, what are you looking for in a new defensive coordinator?
I think number one, you know, great communication, a guy that can develop players, a man that will utilize his assistant coaches and allow them to express themselves and get more out of their units. And a guy that has a history of success, a guy that has a great day-to-day work ethic and knowledge of the offenses that he has to stop. Somebody that can really adapt to Lamar Jackson and the style of offense they play to the next week where you got to get ready for Pat Mahomes and then it's on to Phillip Rivers. There's a lot of different variables that you have to deal with and adapt to. People, person, great drive, and a real desire to be a Raider. I think there's a lot of criteria, but there's some for you.
Beep, beep. Oh. You hear that? That's the sound of John Gruden's truck just rolling over Paul Gunther's corpse. Beep, beep, beep. Oh. He was literally talking about Paul Gunther in every
all
way,
the shit form. That everyone Paul Gunther couldn't do. Oh, god damn. Paul Gunther has got knife wounds in his ass right now.
And Paul Gunther, like, notorious for just like, this is the defense I run, and this is how we're doing it, and we're not changing, right?
Exactly that. Yeah, using assistant coaches, so he's not getting feedback on what plays and what calls are the best. You know, god damn,
getting the most out of his players.
Good, like, teacher, right, developing young players. That's all the shit that they were saying about Gunther that he couldn't do.
John Gruden has gone full on, just like, all right, this is where I'm dumping all my shit, right into the grave of Paul Gunther.
The big problem with that is if shit still goes sideways, there's no Gunther to shit on now. Mm-hmm. He's the only constant coaching wise, really. Mm-hmm. It's going to be him and all him. So, I mean, goddamn.
Well, speaking of the new defensive coordinator, Ian Rappaport tweeted this week, the coaches that the Raiders have officially requested permission to talk to. So, like, we can guess all day long who they may talk to, but if any coach is currently hired by another franchise, you need permission to talk with them. And the ones that he brought up were the Chargers defensive coordinator, Gus Bradley, Falcons interim head coach, Raheem Morris, and Rams assistant, Joe Barry. All guys we've talked about. Wade Phillips is unemployed, so you don't need permission to talk to him. Lord knows he wants to talk to you. Everyone who's got a Twitter account.
He wants that paper, to. Baby.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Money. Unemployed dudes want to be employed. It's Wade Phillips. I take any of these guys over Wade Phillips. Is there one guy that stands out most to you? And is there anyone? How much do you think John Gruden's tirade right there really, really, truly is about who he wants at defensive coordinator versus him just dumping on Paul Gunther? Like, is he going to stick to his word, or is this just a crap on Gunther's head time?
No, I honestly think he's describing Raheem Morris at the same time. So if Raheem Morris gets a head coaching job, which he very well might, I would be surprised if he did it. If he doesn't get one, I think he's the guy. If he does get one, I think it's going to be Joe Barry.
Not Gus Bradley?
I don't know, man. I think
Chargers have a lot of talent on defense. So it's like, it's easy to make your
defensive coordinator. And they didn't play great defensively. They weren't great defensively this year. I mean, they had a couple injuries here and there, but everyone does. I've been hearing, the more I've been reading about Joe Barry, the more I like him. The more I've been reading about how the players like him and how he's just one of those up and coming guys. That's like, yeah, he's one of those guys that's like, oh yeah, he's this linebacker coach, or he was the quality coordinator, or he was a special teams guy for a while. And then he just, boom, he jumps on the scene and then everyone's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Where do these guys come from? And a little younger, can maybe relate to these guys in a different way that maybe a Raheem Morris can relate to the guys. But I would take either one of them, man. I think either one of them would be a good choice. I really do think Raheem Morris is going to get a head coaching job somewhere. The way that Atlanta played after he took over, night and day. But we'll see, man. We'll see. I really do think he was describing Raheem Morris at the same time shitting on Gunther.
And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I think our defensive coordinator position is a great job. It's a really, really good job. You've got a really great offense. You've got a bunch of on paper talent at defense, right? All first, like handful of first round draft picks that are, you know, second, third year players, expensive free agents at linebacker and a couple on the line. And also like the defense was so bad that all you need is marginal improvement and you get to take all the credit. You take all the credit. You'd be like, yeah, I single-handedly turned the Raiders defense around, you know, and you're going to get good starting field position because the Raiders offense is good. Is you know, not late in the season, but generally really good at protecting the ball. Carr doesn't throw a lot of picks. We don't, you know, Jacobs doesn't really fumble that often. Special teams is great. Our kicker's fantastic. Our kick returners are fantastic. We got cap space, and you know, there's no question that Gruden finally is going to dump some money in the defense. We're going to draft in the defense probably. Like I can't imagine defensive coordinators, a job for a defensive coordinator better than the Raiders. And you're in Vegas where there's no income tax, right? In Nevada, right? Like the plus is just keep adding up. The Raiders should get the cream of the crop at defensive coordinator. Like other than guys who get head coaching jobs, anyone who doesn't get head coaching jobs, the Raiders should really get the best possible defensive coordinator available unless dealing with Gruden is a pain in the ass. That's the only thing I can think of. But he gave Paul Gunther carte blanche. Like Adam Pretty Hill much. Told us a couple weeks ago. He's just like, yeah, everyone. John's like, yeah, I'm going to do the offense. You take Paul Gunther, you handle the defense.
Well, you know what? If you look at it from this perspective, if Raheem Morris is the guy, it's the exact opposite as the Bucks. Mm-hmm. When he went in to defensive coordinator at the Bucks, that cupboard was thinning, if not bare.
Yeah.
Older stars, older players, cut, young, all young guys, maybe unproven because a lot of the older guys are playing already. Our cupboard and defensively is anything but bare. It's been fed. It's been a lot of draft picks put in there. A lot of first, second round draft picks on this defense. A lot of guys that can play that have shown in college, at least, that they can play. And we'll see, man. It's a different situation than when he was in Tampa.
Yeah, we don't need a defensive coordinator that's some like evil genius and's got these NASA computers lined up. That's like, oh yeah, we're gonna have this cornerback, you know, levitate out of the sky when they're in trips. And then, you know, when we go against a lefty, we're gonna do like, we don't really need a guy that's that intricate, like, you know, a beautiful mind working on equations. We need someone who just brings out the best in the guys that we have. Something simple, because our defense is so young, that just brings out the best in one-on-one situations. Like, how can we make Damon Arnette feel comfortable against a number one receiver? How can we make Max Crosby beat whatever tackle is guarding him? How can we make Corey Littleton just like maximize what he does well? Like that's what we need. Not some evil genius who's got a TI-83 calculator and figuring out coverages.
Well, the thing is, like I said last week about Gruden, he's not very dynamic. He's very Gunther-esque in the way, well, this is my offense. Mm-hmm. This is what we run. And there we go. We need a more dynamic coach on the defensive side to be able to bring out the special talents that each one of these guys has. Yeah. I mean, again, I'll take Morris or take Barry. Either one. I think they're both great fits.
Another element that I want to talk about is back to the offense. So Nelson Agholor, obviously fantastic for us this season. Costs us $1 million, veteran minimum. Talk about bang for your buck, right? Oh, yeah. Talk about all the bad pickups you got on defense. What a hell of a pickup on at wide receiver for Nelson Aguilar, especially with Terrell Williams not playing this season. He's going to be gone. Henry Ruggs missing a lot of games, not playing what we thought. You know, other guys, like, it was basically the Darren Waller show until Nelson Aguilar showed up. But the problem was, he's going to ask for a lot of money, right? I mean, he's going to ask for it, right? And so we're thinking, like, damn, like, with as much of as our defense needs help, and we've got young wide receivers who are now going to be second-year guys that could be great. We got Darren Waller. We got Foster Moreau. We got Josh Jacobs, who keeps wanting to be part of the passing game. He hasn't yet, but he wants to be a part of it. Do we really need to pay crazy money for another receiver? And I don't know if John Gruden wants to do it after what happened with Antonio Brown and Terrell Williams. Like, damn it, do I pay another star receiver who could just flop on us? Remember, Nelson Aguilar wasn't anything special in Philadelphia, even though he's amazing this year. I think we can get Nelson Aguilar cheap.
Okay.
And this is why. As well as he played, it is a buyer's market at wide receiver in 2021.
Oh, yeah.
These are all of the wide receivers that are going to be free agents. Now, a lot of them are going to be, you know, they're going to be picked up again, franchise tagged, whatever. But all right, these are all... These are the free agent wide receivers coming up next season.
All right, what do you got?
Allen Robinson.
Okay.
Chris Godwin.
Ooh.
Kenny Golladay.
Ooh.
Juju Smith-Schuster.
Ooh.
Corey Davis.
All right.
Will Fuller.
Okay.
T.Y. Hilton. Ooh. Hold on, I'm still going.
Wow.
Curtis Samuel. Sammy Watkins.
God damn.
A.J. Green. Marvin Jones. All free agents next season. And I'd say they're all...
Wow.
On paper, better than Nelson Aguilar, minus probably like AJ Green because he's older, Marvin Jones, Sammy Watkins kind of didn't pan out the way people wanted. But I think on paper, I think the rest of the league would assume all those other players, Robinson, Goodwin, Golladay, Schuster, Davis, Fuller, Hilton, Samuel, I bet they'd rank all those players above Nelson Aguilar.
I agree. Now, here's the deal. If all these receivers sign for something very close to one another, maybe not total contract, but year-wise, per year-wise, that can screw us.
Yeah.
Because if they're all bunched in that one little zone, he just needs to get a little bit underneath that, and he won't be as high paid as them.
If the average is really high,
yeah.
And then they can, you know, boost up the average.
Yeah,
you're right.
They'll boost up the average, but I mean.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. Because not only are there a ton of amazing free agents available, but the latest mock draft from CBS says that they're predicting that 7 wide receivers are going to get picked in the first round in this draft. 7 wide receivers. You've got Jamar Chase, LSU, obviously. Devontae Smith, obviously, Heisman winner. Jalen Waddle, the other Alabama wide receiver. You've got Amon-Ra St. Brown from SC, as you know.
Yeah. Yep.
Trojan weirdo.
You love it.
I think there's Rashad Bateman from Minnesota. I didn't get to watch him that much this season, but he's 6'2", 210, and he's coming out early. So if you're a team that needs a number one receiver or a really good receiver, you've got a ton of options. You've got a ton of options, whether you're using it in the draft, whether you're using it free agency. It is a quarterback or it is a wide receiver rich time right now, which is great for us. Hell, I'd make a shout out for Juju Smith-Schuster. I'd try for Allen Robinson. I'd try for Chris Godwin. I'd be down. I don't want to lose Nelson Aguilar. But I'd be down for like a veteran wide receiver to help our second year players that we drafted this year. I'd be totally down for an Allen Robinson, T.Y. Hilton.
Imagine T.Y. Hilton on one side and Ruggs on the other,
mm-hmm.
while running around the middle. Jesus.
I'd be so down for a veteran wide receiver. I prefer Nelly, but if he says, show me the money, it's like, all right, we got other options, dog.
Yeah, man. It only takes one though. It only takes one. Because here's the thing. If a team misses out on the wide receiver that they want, Nelly's always there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he ain't giving us no fucking hometown discount, I'll tell you that, after he played his ass off for $1 million.
But that's the other part is do you pay him like a Galladay, Godwin, Juju Smith-Schuster after multiple seasons of drops and then one really good season with the Raiders?
You know, also you could tell him, look, man, you can get more money if you sign a shorter contract here and just keep doing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And then you can get that because he's still a young guy. He's still young. But it's going to be one of those things where we'll see. It takes one guy that loves him, one guy that, you know, maybe saw this in Philly, or one guy that, you know, just falls in love with him to give him a little bit of extra cash, man. We see it every year. A guy's like, he signed for fucking what? And, man.
Yeah, it's as much as I love any of these wide receivers on the Raiders, there is something to say about how John Gruden and his relationship with young wide receivers. Like we heard that the Jerry Porter interview from last year that we played a little while ago, that he doesn't think he can handle young wide receivers at all. Like, look at Amari Cooper. Like, he was decent on the Raiders for a while, but not for what he was drafted for. And he's far better playing for the Cowboys. I don't think it's that John Gruden hates young guys and he's like, oh, old man yells at cloud and these damn whippersnappers with their TikTok and diet sodas. I don't think it's like that. I think it's just a really hard offense to grasp. He wants every wide receiver to know every wide receiver position. You got to have all your reads. And you got to have a certain mind for it. So when a player meshes in that system, and we have evidence that he does, like Nelson Aguilar, it's kind of the same way how I feel about Derek Carr. It's like, could another quarterback come in and jive in John Gruden's system? Sure, but you're rolling major dice there that someone's going to be able to figure out this unique system when it's proven a lot of players can't figure this out or can't thrive under John Gruden.
You know, that's one of the things you see with some of the younger receivers and the big jumps second, third year. Because Joey Porter, man, he jumped. He made that jump. Mm-hmm. Year two, year three, he made that big jump, and he was the man. He was the man. Yeah. So, I keep saying it. I've said it almost every single episode. I see Bryan Edwards being that guy. Mm-hmm. I see Bryan Edwards being that guy.
Or is he a guy that just didn't fit in John Gruden's system?
I don't know, man.
Is he an Amari Cooper kind of?
He's a big, strong, tall receiver. I mean, I don't think he's. I've never heard anything about him not being able to run routes or roots, as Rory would say. Roots.
Really, but,
man, that hands catch, that's such an underrated catch because the defender had his hand on the ball, yanking it. And he just had two hands on it, went to the ground, and didn't fucking budge. That is some strong-ass fucking hands. And as Mayock would say, he's a high-point hand catcher. Mm-hmm. Gets the ball at the high point, catches it with his hands, and it's not moving anywhere. I think he's definitely in the mold of these big, these Kenny Galladays, maybe not as fast, but these big Allen Robinsons, these bigger receivers that are hand catchers that you throw it up, and he's going to get it. That was his thing. That was his thing in college, man. Just throw the ball up and he'll grab it. And that was his deal.
And so, he's the only receiver like that we have. Like Ruggs, smaller speedster, gets beat up. Well, yeah, receivers that we have. Like, you know, obviously Darren Waller can, but as a tight end. But like, you know, if someone on the outside is a receiver, you know, it's Hunter Renfro's not that guy. He's a route runner. You know, Nelson Aguilar is a speedster. Henry Ruggs is a speedster. Ryan Edwards is the one guy. Actual wide receiver, not Darren Waller or tight end. They're just like, all right, I'm gonna throw it up and you beat your guy. See that little 5'10" cornerback? I need you to just like hockey hip checking out of the way, bring that ball up at the high point and get us 7 points.
You got Waller on one side and you got Bryan Edwards on the other. They're guessing. They're guessing. Okay, which way is it gonna go? You know, which way is it gonna go in the red zone, especially? I would run that all day. Okay, stop it. Stop this. I got guys going across the middle. I got the backs leaking out. And I got, you know, Waller on one side. And I got Bryan Edwards on the other one who can bolt high point. Pick your poison.
That's the goal. All right. Pick your poison. So coming up next, we've got Dan Hell. We had a great conversation with him. We talked about his gigs. We talked about why do people hate Derek Carr? A whole bunch of stuff. And
his hairline.
Awesome dog. Hairline. Yeah, got some hair tips. Lord knows we need them. Over here on the Autumn Windbacks. Dan Helly, right here. Take it out. All right, our next guest on the Autumn Windbags is a guy who's done a little bit of everything. You can catch him on DirecTV, Fox. He does preseason play-by-play for the Titans. He even does UFC. He's got his own podcast. But his best content by far is his Instagram page, where you can see his bulldog doing barrel rolls down a grassy hill at least once a week. His name, Dan Helling, joins us now. How you doing, Dan?
Hey, Dan.
What's up, boys? I didn't know you were checking that out, RJ. I will tell you, man. I am always amazed by how many people comment on that. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. And then I posted it a couple of times and people are like, that's crazy. Addie, her name's Addie. She get her own Instagram page. I have yet to do it, but I need to get on that.
Now, is that something you trained her to do? Or she just see that hill and said like, oh, this looks fun. Because she has the bulldog's the perfect body for it. Because they're just barrels.
Well, so we got her at the beginning of COVID and they had locked a lot of stuff down out here in California. I live near the beach and don't have a yard, right? So there's not many grassy areas around me, and that's the closest one. And for whatever reason, I think she was just so excited about seeing grass, she started rolling around and then flopped down the hill a couple times, and next thing you know, it's a thing.
The best things are accidents.
I've never seen a bulldog be so graceful. It's beautiful. So we got the playoffs are set. Raiders not in it. What's your general grade of the Raiders season after going 8-8, the highs and lows? Like, how do you grade their season?
Listen, I thought there was a point in time, because we would go through our favorite 6 or 7 games of the week on my podcast with MJD, and we would pick the games. And I remember at about the midpoint when they were 6-3, right? That was the high point of the season for the Raiders, you know, coming off that win when they won an Arrowhead for the first time in seemingly forever. I said, this is a team that scares me a little bit. This is the team that can do some things. The thing about the Raiders, and you could say this about so many teams, is yes, they are, you know, 3 plays away from being an 11 win team, but they're also 3 plays away from being a 5 win team.
Yep.
And there is so much room for improvement, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And I know they want to put a lot of it on, you know, lack of production from the rookie class and some of these free agents. You know, a lot of it had to do with COVID. Every team was dealing with COVID. Mm-hmm. I'm most concerned about how they have faded in each of the last 2 years and how we haven't seen. I need impact free agents. I need impact rookies. And I don't feel like we've seen that the last couple of years with the Raiders. So, and if you're asking me for a grade, coming off a 7-9 season in the shortened off season with the trials and tribulations of COVID, like everybody else, to go from 7-9 to 8-8, it's an improvement, but not much. I'll give him a C+.
Okay. Passing.
I was going to say about a C, you know, what do you attribute this to? 2 years in a row, basically exactly the same thing. One win apart. 6-3 to 7-9 last year and 8-8 this year. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I mean, the offense has been a top 10 offense, right? And that's Gruden's specialty. So you would expect the offense to be productive. The defense has been atrocious. I mean, your defensive coordinator's fired in December, and one of your, you know, better defensive players says, hey, look, we lack intensity. We're not prepared. And there's very little attention to detail.
Yeah,
that is, if that's not the most damning thing a player can say about a coaching staff, about preparation, about getting them ready to perform, then I don't know what is. And I like Max Crosby. He's the player who said that. They have to get better on that side of the ball, and they need somebody else in my mind offensively who's just, I like Josh Jacobs. I just don't know if he's that hammer yet. I need somebody else who can close the game besides Darren Waller. And I'm a big fan of Derek Carr, and I will be the first to admit that I'm a little jaded. I know his brother. I like his brother. I worked with him for a long time at NFL Network and David Carr. And because of that, got to know Derek just a little bit. And I root for him. I root for guys I like. And I think this year we saw Derek improve in the areas that we wanted to see him improve as fans of Derek or fans of the Raiders, right? Attack downfield. Don't be a game manager. He did that. His average depth of throw went from like 6.9 to 9.1. He made 20 more big time throws this year, as opposed to only six more throws that had the potential to be intercepted. He improved. It's like, it's a top 10 offense. He's also a top 10 quarterback. And I don't really think that can be argued. You look at, you know, when you try to grade quarterback, there's the eyeball test and then there's the numbers. Right. And I don't think you can look at both and say, this is exactly what it is. You need to take a little bit of everything, right? And sprinkle them into the pot and stir them up. And then you come out with your formula. And I think for Derek Carr, when you do that with the eyeball test, and then you take the Pro Football Focus grades, there's no question in my mind that he needs to be there long-term, that he is a top 10 NFL quarterback, that he has gotten better in John Gruden's offense. He just needs more around him. He needs more on the O-line. I'd like to see another, you know, big bodied playmaking wide receiver out there to help pair him with Waller and Ruggs. And there's pieces, man. Like, I'm so excited for what the Raiders have. I'm so pumped for when they're going to have fans, you know, finally in the stadium in Vegas. They have so much going for them, and they're this close. They need to hit a couple of home runs in free agency in the draft, and they haven't done that the last 2 years.
Well, the reason you can't go after Derek Carr is because his brothers will attack you on Twitter. It's like, you can't do it. They'll be all over you. Is David Carr like that in when you're just dealing with them professionally? Just like, oh, Derek can do no wrong. Like, blah, blah, blah. Because it's just so funny. Watch. Like, I love it. Right. Like, I have three younger brothers. Right. And no one's allowed to pick on them but me. You know, like, you know the rules. But is that just like constantly with him?
No, not at all. I think he's pretty realistic. Obviously he's going to grade his brother on a little bit of a curve. But he's also the one that, I mean, he talks to him every day. There's nobody that coaches Derek more than David. And I think a lot of what on Twitter, I think a lot of it comes from Darren, who's the other brother, who's the high school football coach. He tends to monitor that a little bit more, and their kids, right? They talk about having kids. We're talking about Philip Rivers before the podcast. I mean, the Carr family, there's at least a dozen kids between the three, right?
Yep.
So they're all old enough, and they're monitoring everything that's said now too. And it's an incredibly close family. I went up there to David's house to tape a podcast this summer, and Derek's building a house next door. Darren's going to be building a house right there. And his folks basically live in the guest house of the compound behind his. It's an unbelievable facility. They have this huge barn where they work out and train athletes. They have a 75-yard football field. They have a BMX track. They have a lazy river. And they have everything.
They know RJ.
Yeah. You know what? It was funny. I said to him, I'm like, damn, DC. He goes, dude, I live in Bakersfield. You got to bring the fun to you. He did that.
All of a sudden, my dad building us a swing set in the backyard doesn't sound quite as cool.
Not very cool.
I wonder, like, why do people hate Derek Carr? Because I'm with you, Dan. Like, you look at his 2016 campaign when he was on his way to potentially being the NFL MVP before he broke his leg. In 2020, better completion percentage, threw for more yards, over 10% better QBR rating. He's at 101. He was or five better. He was 96 in that 2016 campaign. Why do people hate him? Is it just because he wore like eyeliner a few years ago? Like, I don't get why people just hate Derek Carr. Even Raider fans.
The eyeliner doesn't help for me.
I think when you get tagged as a game manager, then it's almost like the worst thing you can possibly be tagged with, right? Yeah. You would much rather be the gunslinger, be the freewheeling guy out there. I don't know if you guys remember, but when Patrick Mahomes came out of Texas Tech, that was the biggest knock on him. Oh, he's a little loose with the football. He has a lot of Brett Favre in him. He's a gunslinger. He goes for it all. But that's kind of what we like, right? We want superheroes to be gunslingers. We don't want superheroes to be Mr. Medium, you know, kind of middle of the road. And so I think once Derek was tagged with that, it was hard for him to step out of that. You know, he'd been pigeonholed. And so, he never goes downfield. He went downfield. He didn't go downfield all the time, but he did that more this year. I don't know. I think he's a likable guy. Maybe it's that he's too likable and people are looking for flaws. I just think if you have it, what's the most important position in football? Obviously it's quarterback. You have a top 10 guy, right? Mm-hmm. I think by all measure, you have a top 10
guy. Every metric, every possible metric.
Yeah, let's go. Let's build around. Get those other pieces there. I did think, having worked with the Tennessee Titans and calling their preseason games, I did think there was going to be a little more of an edge to Derek this year once they signed Marcus Mariota, because they didn't sign Marcus like the Saints signed Jameis Winston to, you know, a minimum salary deal. That dude's making $8 million a year, $10 million a year to be a backup quarterback. There's not many guys that are doing that. And when you do sign somebody like that, you do that with the expectation that they probably will play at some point that season. Sure. And he did, and he played okay, but obviously he was hurt for the majority of the season, never really a threat to Derek. But I think that could have sharpened Derek and maybe given him a little extra edge this year. And maybe that's what he needs to carry him over into next year.
What's a football Sunday like for you? Like, is it like up at 4 a.m.? Because I talked to all these people who work, like, you know, you got 10, 12 games on a Sunday and you got all this work, all this prep. Is it just 17 cups of coffee to get you through that day?
I drink a lot of coffee on Sunday, bro.
Yeah, I bet.
It's funny. So I'll have a couple of games a year. This year, I only had one game for Fox. It was a Washington Detroit game in Detroit. So I was only traveling one weekend, and the rest of the time I'm going from, and I'm saying that the names of the towns, RJ, because you know the location, from my home in Manhattan Beach to the DirecTV studio in El Segundo. It's like 10 minutes. So yeah, it's a super easy commute. I wake up about 6, make a big old pot of coffee. I'm out the door by about 6:45. And then I have to go get a COVID test in Culver City, which is another neighboring town.
Yeah. Other direction.
Yeah. Another direction. Wait on the COVID test. And then I drive from Culver City to the studio in El Segundo, where we do the Fantasy Zone show for DirecTV. And for those of you unfamiliar with the Fantasy Zone show, it's essentially the Red Zone. You're doing the exact same thing as the Red Zone channel, hopping around from game to game, only instead of talking about the team and who's winning and who's losing, you're talking about the players and how well each individual player is doing from a fantasy standpoint. It's a lot of the same stuff you would talk about on Red Zone channel. And it literally is dropping in on it's awesome. It's 7 hours in studio with 4 or 5 people you really enjoy being around. We have Lindsay Rhodes. We have John Hansen, the guru, the fantasy football guru, one of the original guys in the fantasy football world who's really smart in that realm. James Coe, who used to work with me at NFL Network, is doing some Amazon shows and DirecTV stuff now. And then Dr. Mark Addix, who is a former lineman for the Redskins and Chiefs, won a Super Bowl with the Redskins, turned orthopedic surgeon.
Wow. So he now a real underachiever. Yeah.
He operated on RG3 and a bunch of athletes, and he's our injury expert. So he's in there watching the games with us. And when somebody goes down, he'll watch the tape. And I swear to God, 9 times out of 10, Doc Addix is right on point. I don't know why Fox and CBS don't have an injury expert in-house on call like they do Mike Pereira and Dean Blandino for officiating, because Addix is so good. He's a former player and Super Bowl champ. I mean, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif is the only other person on the planet, I think, the Chiefs lineman, who can claim to be a Super Bowl champion and orthopedic surgeon. And he's not even there. You know, he's in his residency. So anyway, that's my Sunday. I'm there for 7 hours. I get home by like 5 o'clock Pacific time and in time to watch the Sunday night football game. And, you know, drive my kids and wife crazy. You're like, haven't you had enough football already? This is what I
no,
do.
No, such thing. No.
20 years.
Well, luckily you do that commute on a Sunday. Cause if you did like rush hour on a Monday, that 10 minutes is like 90. What was it like working with Snoop Dogg for the Dana White Contender Series?
So that was the first year of the Contender Series. And I actually thought it was brilliant. By Dana and the rest of that crew that decided to go with Snoop, because they, as you know, RJ, they started the Contender Series from nothing. Mm-hmm. And essentially what it is and what it was is a pipeline for guys who are on the cusp of getting a UFC contract, or some guys who are in the UFC and then got cut after a couple of losses to get back in. So it's a 5-fight card on Tuesday nights. And at the end of the night, this is the hook. Dana will award a contract or several contracts to select winners that he deems worthy of fighting in the UFC. And it's become a major pipeline for the UFC in the last 3 or 4 years. So the first year, to create a little buzz, they had what was called the Snoop Cast with Snoop Dogg and Uriah Faber. And then they had, I'll just call it the Straight Cast, you know, just regular calling the fights with me and Eve Edwards. And so they were in another area, right? So I wasn't calling the fights with Snoop, which would have been awesome. The crazy thing is the whole thing kind of evolved because Snoop would come in and his area was kind of above the octagon at the Ultimate Fighter gym there. And he was smoking and drinking some gin and juice. And it got to the point where the smoke was spilling over into the octagon. And so the fans and the fighters were smelling all the weed. So they had to be like, Snoop, bro, you can't smoke during the fights. So I think he started vaping a little bit. And there then we still go. have his gin and juice with Mariah. And it was a crazy call. Like, I'll be honest, I just started and was still learning how the process of calling fights and hopefully getting better as each fight went on. But I can't imagine anybody who's listening to us with Snoop Dogg there, you know, smoking and sipping on some gin and juice with Hall of Famer Uriah Faber watching those fights. Because it really was like, you know, I had my boards out and, you know, RJ, you know how it looks when somebody's calling a fight.
Sure, yeah.
And they were just like smoking and drinking and talking. And it was just a different call. So I remember after probably the second or third week, Snoop would go out. He had like a little trailer where he'd hang out with his guys. And that was when O'Malley.
Sean O'Malley.
Sugar Sean O'Malley. He won his fight and he went in the trailer and that's kind of like what, when he blew up, like he smoked with Snoop in the trailer, got his picture taken and then everything like, oh man, this little kid's good. And then Snoop started talking about him.
That's like catching a pass from Joe Montana, smoking with Snoop, you know?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And I remember I went in the trailer and, you know, talked to Snoop for a little bit and had met him a couple of times before, you know, from NFL Network. And he's good buddies, Willie McGinnis, who I work with a lot. They're both from Long Beach, grew up together, blah, blah, blah. And, I said, I probably should not take a puff and get my picture taken with Snoop. May not be good for the NFL Network career. So I passed on that at that moment.
For the private collection.
Exactly. Yeah. But it was cool, man. He only did it, you know, as he only did it for 1 year and the contender series continued on, but now he's doing other fights.
Yep.
And now he's jumped back into the fight game.
Yeah.
Who's the most, you've also worked with Daniel Cormier, you know, former UFC champion, Olympic wrestler, one of the funnest guys in MMA.
He's awesome. But
you've worked with a million talents, different talent over the years. Is there anyone more disruptive in a production meeting than Daniel Cormier? Anybody at all? Because I've been in many with him as well. For those who don't know, I work in UFC as well. And if you're trying to get something done with DC and you think it takes 10 minutes, give yourself 30 because that guy's nonstop.
Yeah, I'll give you one. And I don't know if disruptive is the right word, but unique might be a little better.
Okay.
My last game that I did for Fox this year was with Aqib Talib. And he would let me ask all my questions in the production meeting of the players and the coaches, but the players wanted to ask him questions, right? They wanted to get his take. He's fresh off the field on what he was doing. And it's actually pretty similar to what fighters, when they, you know, they could hear what DC and those guys were saying during those first few fights where there were no fans there because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And you remember there were a couple of them that actually took what DC said and applied it in the octagon. No, I mean, I've been really lucky, you know, with the Contender Series and actually called a card, Ultimate Fighter card on Fox with DC. Paul Felder is unbelievable. Yep. Professional, consummate. I mean, he's really good. And you could tell he has that classic training in acting, right? So he's just uber comfortable in front of the camera. And then talk about characters. Bisping's another one.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Bisping is very much like Cormier in that both of those guys, like there's nobody on the planet you'd rather have a beer with than those two guys.
Yeah. I've had a chance to work with Bisping for years and years and years now. And no matter where you are, no matter what time it is, Bisping has the superpower where he can find booze. It could be 3 a.m. outside of Charlotte, Carolina. Like, It's amazing. There's been multiple times we're just like, oh, the bars are closed and whatever, like, small town we're in, traveling with the UFC and working. He's like, we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. And boom, he shows up with three people and five bottles. He's like, what? Do you have a replicator somewhere? It's amazing. Aqib Talib, obviously, like, I want to hate him because he's a Bronco, but
I love him. And a chain snatcher.
And a chain snatcher, right? I wanted to hate him. He was great. I hope nobody tries to, like, polish him. Because just Aqib Talib raw, I hate to say it, I hate myself, but he was great.
Yeah, so he did one more game after he did the one with me, and that was his first one. He does work with a broadcasting coach who helped him just in terms of the cadence of a game and how things were working. But this I can say about Aqib, the first half of the game, I would look over and. We know we have our spotting board with every player's number and some information. And, you know, you're looking at the field and you're looking at the monitor and you're looking at your board. And I actually had another person there spotting who would point at the numbers on my board. So for instance, when Alex Smith throws it to Logan Thomas, I know that it's complete to Logan Thomas. I can see that. My spotter helps me find out who made the tackle. It just all happens so quick.
Yep.
That helps me when he's like, okay, he identifies, you know, who makes Romeo Okwara for Detroit, let's say. And I could see when all that's going on, the producer in the booth is talking to the color analyst about, okay, hey, we're going to show this replay, right? So he's listening to the producer, trying to listen to me, trying to look at his own board because he has something that he wants to say about somebody who may have missed a tackle or missed a block. And I could see his head kind of spinning in the first half while he's trying to kind of figure out where everything is. And then in the second half, he took the board and he just said, fuck it. I'm just going to watch the game and talk about what I see. And
he's going to snoopcast it.
Yeah. And he was awesome.
Yeah.
And it was so raw and real. And the thing about a guy like Aqib, who's been around the block a lot, right? You know, for the Patriots and the Bucks and in the Rams and the Broncos, he's played for so many guys and played with so many guys. The coaching staff for Washington and for Detroit, he literally had played for half the guys on both of those staffs. Mm-hmm. He had played against everybody, including both quarterbacks, Alex Smith and Matthew Stafford, on the field. And he's really football smart. Like, he really knows the game. And he's a cool guy to hang out with. So I hope he gets a lot more run. I could not have had more fun calling the game with Aqib. And I made a conscious effort during that game to stay off Twitter because, listen, Aqib doesn't sound like a polished broadcaster. And I knew some people would hate it and some people would love it. And that's what it was. And I think the more you listen to him, the more you will grow to love it. And like I said, I hope he gets some more run because it was so different and refreshing that I think it makes for a different watch.
Yeah. I loved it. I was like you. The first half, I'm like, all right. The second half, I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? Great. I loved it. It gives guys like me who don't have a background in broadcasting or in any media, like a little glimmer of hope. We could find a niche somewhere, you know?
Not too big, Soto.
Not too big. Yeah. Listen, I'm terrible. It's okay. It's all right. I know my limitations.
You know, it's funny. He had this one phrase. I think it was Washington threw a touchdown pass, and he goes, "That's the honey hole. That's the honey hole in the defense." And I'm like, oh, I haven't heard that. And he goes, "Yeah, I mean, you know, the sweet spot. That's the honey hole." And I use that phrase on my DirecTV show, and I guess it's because they know me. But my producer's like, "Dude, that sounds dirty. I don't know if you should say honey hole." I'm like, dude, it's that. What is wrong with you?
Isn't that the perfect name though? That's yes. Perfect. When it's not sexual, but it almost it sounds be. That way. That's why it's perfect.
Theoretically, I guess it could be. And I'm like, I talked to him, and then one of the commercials. I go, what is wrong with you? Like, there's nothing dirty about honey hole. I said, Aqib used it on our game last week. That's where I got it. He goes, my point exactly. That's dirty.
100%. So. One thing I want to talk about, and one thing that's been bugging me, you guys are talking about Derek Carr, is his touchdown inefficiency in the red zone. And I feel that's a big area of concern. I mean, you see that as more of a Carr thing or a Gruden thing?
I see that as a little bit of both. I think when you're ineffective in the red zone, it's the plays that are being called and how you're functioning, you know, within the play being called. And I don't know what kind of latitude that DC has in the red zone to check out of plays, because I know everybody puckers up a little bit, you know, when they get inside the red zone. And I'm not just talking about players, I'm talking about coaches too. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that I thought was really interesting, we had Mercedes Lewis, Packers tight end, on our podcast. And I said, what percentage of the plays throughout a course of a game come from head coach Matt LaFleur, and what percentage of them come from Aaron Rodgers? And he said 55% of all the plays the Packers run come from Aaron Rodgers. And I'd be curious to find out what the percentage is for Derek Carr, because it's not that. And it's not that for most quarterbacks. But is it 90? Is it 95? Is it 100? I don't know. So I think here's the other thing I would say too. When you're talking red zone with the Raiders, who's the one guy that you have to make sure that you guard? There's one guy. It's Darren Waller. Darren Waller. Right? That's it. And Josh Jacobs was hurt for some of the year, wasn't as effective as we'd like him to be for some of the year. I think once you can kind of get him going full bore again, and add one, that's why I'm saying you need one more closer on
off. Think about Bryan Edwards. I'm a huge Bryan Edwards fan.
Big body. Yeah.
Big body guy, big, good hands.
Great hands, actually. There's somebody just has to evolve. Somebody has to be signed. Somebody has to be drafted. They're close, man. They're close. But it does bother me when you hear coaches say, and I know I said this earlier, oh, you know, we're, you know, three plays away from being 11 win team. Like I said, you could be three plays away from being a 5-win team. Every single team in the easily. NFL can say that.
What do you make of John Gruden's second stint overall? I mean, it's 3 years in. He's technically improved every season. But I think when he came in with, you know, roster space and this line and Derek Carr firing all cylinders and got a Pro Bowl tight end, I think people thought third season should be at least in the playoffs. But he's improving every time, and Carr's improving every time. So it's like every time you think you've got some really good criticism, there's a stat or a number that kind of contradicts it. It's what do you make of his second stint?
I didn't expect him to be a world beater.
Okay.
Based on, I covered him when he was in Tampa, and he got there and the cupboard was full, and he won a Super Bowl with Tony Dungy's team. Mm-hmm. And the more control that he got in Tampa, the worse the Bucs got. And his last couple years, he didn't have a quarterback. He didn't have a defense because all those guys, the Derek Brooks, the Warren Sapps, the Simeon Rices, they had aged out and been traded or cut. Mm-hmm. And I was curious to see how Gruden evolved after that 10 years away from the game. And I don't know how much he's evolved. I think that remains to be seen. I would venture to guess that working for him is not easy. Okay. So
yeah,
we'll find out in terms of the who he hires as defensive coordinator. I'll tell you this. If Raheem Morris does not get hired as a head coach, and John Gruden is able to bring him over as a defensive coordinator, that will tell me a lot.
Yeah.
Because he's worked for him before, Raheem has. He's familiar with him. And if he wants to come back and work for him again, then I'll say, okay. So there may be some things that have changed. There may be some things that have improved. That would be a big, big deal. Another person I would love to see maybe get a shot to be DC is Joe Barry, who is with the Rams.
Linebacker coach.
And got passed over by Sean McVay for the DC job. He's coaching the linebackers, but he has that assistant head coach title. I know Sean leans on him a lot here in LA. I think Joe Barry could be good too. But let's see how that plays out. I just think he's I think he's tough. I think he's tough to work for, and he is the Raiders. John Gruden.
Sure.
You know, he has the ultimate say in every single thing that happens, from the type of paper they order for the printer to, you know, who sees playing time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a firm believer that the disconnect, I think, between ownership and John is because of COVID, and him and Mark Davis can't go to Applebee's three times a week. You know what I mean? They need that binding process. You know, you gotta sit there with your limitless appetizers and really bond, you know, the way they know how to.
Get your haircut together, you know?
Yeah. Oh, whoa.
That's going to be one of our bets. You have to get a Mark Davis Mark Davis haircut if you miss one of the bets.
What am I going to do? I got no hair.
Let me see what you got going on there, Juan.
Bam. Not a lot. Bam. Yeah.
All right.
I went down to the wood.
You're going to have to tell you something. This is what I always said.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
I said, if it goes.
Look at that mop.
At some point, I'm doing that one. I am shaving that sucker.
I love it.
I'm hanging on as long as possible. I'm doing the cul-de-sac ponytail, you know, where there's just hair here, and either just combing it right over or doing the ponytail out the back. Like I'm going all out, baby.
I'll tell you, RJ, I just had this conversation with Dr. Addicts because he has several sons, and he said, listen, if you're worried about hair, Helly's been taking Propecia for like 15 years. I'll tell you what, I had my best friend from college had a freaking rebirth with his hairline taking Propecia. He started right out of college. And I jumped into broadcasting. I'm moving around from local station to local station. And I think I got to be about 30. And I'm like, oh boy, man, those runways are looking a little longer. And so I hopped on Propecia. I've been taking Propecia like a vitamin since I was 30. And I'm 45 now. And I'm hanging on.
Interesting.
I was asked to roast RJ for his before his wedding, and my favorite one was if you've seen RJ's hair, I've seen better hairlines on Gabriel Gonzaga's back.
All right, but before we let you go, Dan, because you're a play-by-play guy, like you have the power to nickname dudes. Like,
mm-hmm.
If you say a nickname during a game, like it could stick. So I have a couple that I'm going to run by you.
Okay.
And if you call the Raiders next season, you let me know if this is something you're going to try. All right.
Okay.
The center, Rodney Hudson. I think he's the best player regardless of position on the Raiders. Call him the Rod.
Ooh.
Because again, kind of like Honeypot, kind of sexual, but not definitely not.
Yeah.
Seen a no.
I think I would have a tough time pulling the rod out in the middle of a game.
Okay.
Because my color analyst, no matter who it would be, would break out in hysterical laughter because he would have immediately the sexual connotation in his head.
Okay. All right. We'll just leave the it rod. For our show then. if he signs with us again next year, Nelson Aguilar, Nelly never drop.
Ooh. I like that
because you know when he was in the Eagles, he was played by those drops, but he was great he had glue on his hands with the Raiders. So now I think he's earned the nickname Nelly Never Drop.
I love Nelly Never Drop, dude. That's beautiful because you remember the news story
where
somebody dropped a baby out of a window,
unlike Aguilar's ass.
Yeah, and the guy's like, dude, I'm not gonna be Nelson Aguilar. I'm not gonna drop it.
Exactly,
it went viral everywhere. Nelly Never Drop. That's gonna stick, dude.
They were catching babies, unlike Aguilar's ass.
Yeah. And my last one, I know a lot of the stars have to align for this, but if the Raiders play the Patriots and you got Tom Brady instead of Tommy Touchdown, if you say something like, yeah, Tommy Touchdown, but as the Raiders call him, Tommy Tuck Rule, Raider Nation will have your back till the end of your days.
Forever.
Tommy Tuck Rule.
That would be beautiful. I actually, oh gosh.
Tommy Tuck Rule. Love it.
I pray I can get a Patriots Raiders game and call him, or a Patriots Bucks game. A Bucks Raiders game and call him Tommy Tuck Rule. That would be amazing.
All right. Two out of three. That ain't bad.
Love it.
All right, Dan, it was great having you on. I didn't tell this to anybody, but we worked a little bit together with the UFC. Nice to catch up with you. Again, you catch you on DirecTV, Fox, UFC, Dynamite Contender Series. You got his own podcast. The preseason, calling the games for the Tennessee Titans. And of course, that Instagram with Abby rolling around on the grass. Dan, this is awesome. Thanks, bud.
Thanks, Dan.
All right, Juan, RJ, appreciate it, fellas. Good luck with the pod.
All right. So great show we just had. Only one last thing to do. You know what it is.
We know you know all about Gruden's grinders.
Offensive linemen, defensive linemen, special teams players, backups.
But what do you know about Rory's grinders?
I think he's a great dude. I think he's got all the talent in the world.
You can't find me, I'll be the closest one on Grinder.
All right, Soto, with Rory taking a little rest.
Yeah.
Taking a bye week. You gotta pick up the slack. Do you think you can do your best Rory impersonation?
I can't do a British accent to save my life.
Me neither. And I'm like 82% English. Can't do it at all. What's your best accent? What's your best impersonation? Do you have a good one?
Jesus.
Because now you know I'm going to put you on the spot when you say it.
I was in Miami and I had a Russian cab driver. And he's like, listen, I went to the stripper. I said, my nephew, it's his 18th birthday. And how much, you look like a nice girl from a good family. How much to make sex with my nephew? And she told me $800. And it's like, for $800, I fuck my nephew myself. His name was Yuri. He was a Russian cab driver. He was in Miami. He was fucking hot as shit. He has his leather ass, like you out of a movie. Fucking turtleneck with the fucking chains and a leather jacket on. In the fucking middle of the summer. Fucking hilarious, man.
That's your boy. That's your boy.
That's
now.
My boy. Right, Yuri, if you're out there.
We're going to make you start doing segments in that accent. All right. Who's your Rory / Soto's grinder this
All
week?
Right. My Rory / Soto grinder for this week is the one, the only Pro Bowler, Josh Jacobs.
And why? Why, Soto?
You know, Josh, I really appreciate you keeping your re-sign value low. Getting this DUI, crashing your car, wrapping your car around a telephone pole, whatever you did.
Let's get the stats exactly right. So at 4:42 a.m. on a Monday. So literally like 10 hours after they finished the game in Denver against the Broncos. Literally 10 hours.
So he flies home.
Yeah, flight. So they finished the game. Gets showered, gets dressed, does the post-game speech, does the media, hops on a bus, gets to the airport, however long you wait at the airport, boards the plane, flies from Denver to Las Vegas. I don't know how long that flight is, hour and a half, whatever it may be.
About an hour and a half, yeah.
Hour and a half, all right. Gets to Vegas, gets in his car.
Immediately starts drinking.
And immediately just starts chugging Grey Goose. Like, that's going to... So this is assuming he's got a DUI. So his attorney is saying he wasn't drinking. He just fell asleep. Cops say they smelled booze on him. We'll see. But he's got a nasty gash on his forehead. He looks like he's fine to play. Doesn't think his playing career at all. But when you're on TMZ as a young 22-year-old NFL player,
never good.
Never a good sign.
Did you see that hood ass karaoke bar place? The cheap lights.
Guys, keeping it real, man. I gotta give respect for that.
Like, come on, you're making money now. You're not living in your car anymore, dude. Like, come on, dude. Just fucking go to a nice place. That place looks hood rich.
Like, that's kind of, it's like one of those things where it's like, all right, he's 22.
Yeah.
If he was drinking, driving, you know, not smart, but we've all done really dumb things. Something he can learn from, something he can grow from. But when it's contract time, baby, when it's contract time, you can say, you know, Josh, we love you. We're rolling the dice on you. You never know if you're going to start, screaming to a microphone, singing "Listen to Your Heart," and then popping them back, and then getting behind the wheel. I mean,
we need Aguilar to get a little one car fender bender.
It's a little bit of trouble, just a minor trouble.
A misdemeanor, nothing
misdemeanor.
Crazy.
We need a misdemeanor, right? Maybe like a night and a half in jail just to drop down the price so we could pick these guys up better.
And we need a mugshot. When they have the mugshots, that's like, dude, that's all you have to say. Listen, yep. I know, hey, Aggie, we love you, bro, but
bam,
the mugshot.
Yeah, see, you haven't shaved in 3 days. One eye's droopier than the other. Hair's all messed up. Like that kind of mugshot. Like, is this someone we have? Is this someone we're going to pay $12 million to a year? No. Sorry, Nelly. Never drop. That's it for this week's Autumn Windbags. Obviously, no more post game. So every single Thursday, it'll be Soto and I bringing you all the best interviews, analysis, and sophisticated dick and fart jokes. You can't get anywhere else. So
you wouldn't want to get anywhere else.
Why would you want to, right? Until then, knock on wood if you're with me.
Thank you for listening to the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. We also love when you tell your friends, like, subscribe, comment, find us on social media, all those wonderful things. Thanks again to Dan Haley for joining us. Had a great time. And until next time, later.